Okay, starting Audacity now on this Saturday, March 8th, 2014, at approximately 8:43 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on 3990 kilocycles. The first part of this QSO was not recorded. Audacity wasn't on, but we're doing a test to make sure that it is working. In fact, I probably should end up doing a phone patch test with you, you know, in that part of the recording, you know, make sure Skype isn't failing us in any way. And yes, I will answer your question. I am taking the liberty tonight. Over.
Yeah, okay, very good. Well, I'm getting you very well for a daytime signal. You are 15 over 9, which is about a 21 dB signal noise ratio. There is some line noise here, but you're, like I say, you're 21 decibels above the line noise. So although it's not, CD quality signal noise ratio, it's an extremely good signal noise ratio for this time of day and this path, I think. So you're sounding loud and robust. The quality is good. I don't hear any RF in the audio. I wonder, are you hearing any RF in my audio? Because some things have moved in the shack, and I'm always worried that I'm going to introduce RF in the audio when I change things around. So I hope it looks good on the scope, but sometimes it's hard to tell without a signal report exactly if everything is clear in the RF in the background department, which has plagued me in the past. By the way, I listened to some of the Liberty Net and Related Net recordings recently, and I noticed that Steve N8WGM had a really big signal, really big, almost N2IRJ like, and maybe even on some occasions almost VIC like in signal strength. And I attribute that to his switching from his 43-foot vertical to a dipole at 70 feet. It really made a difference in this location. Go ahead.
That makes sense in the distance aspect. He's so close to you. That would make sense. Maybe even at my location it was that way, but I'm not sure. But, yeah, I think other people's verticals fail because they don't have as good of a ground system, and they're not as persistent as I am in, compensating with power and, not worrying about the local fill so much as the distant. Like I said, I can talk to the seven landers, whereas Vic can't.
Yeah. Yeah, anyway, it's you might be at a distance there where the two might be very close. But at this location, the horizontal is doing a lot better. Hey, do I have any noticeable RF in my audio?
When you asked that question before, I put on my headset so I could really hear accurately, and I can't hear any RF until now, and I still don't hear any RF. No, zero.
Okay, great. Yeah, it looks good on the scope. I'm not listening on headphones right now, so I can't even hear my own mixer audio. I'm just sitting here, and the speaker's mute when I go in the transmit mode. So I guess everything's all right. I didn't even bother to tune up the amplifier. I just left it tuned up from the other day when I was testing, and I guess it's okay because I see the peaks going up to about 900 to 1,000 watts, which is about par for the course for the 572Bs. I really need to get in there and change the padding capacitor in the loading section of the Pi network in the amp because I think I could actually get a little bit more power out of these tubes. But for the time being, it seems to be working okay. By the way, what is my signal noise ratio? What's my peak S meter reading at its highest compared with the noise S meter? You, as I said, you're giving me a 21 dB signal noise ratio. Over.
Okay, I temporarily switched to the vertical for reception before you asked the question, and I will give you an answer for both. Right now, on the vertical, you're giving me an S9, and my noise is, I believe, an S6. And I'm going to go back to the vertical. I know that on the vertical, you were just intermittently touching a 7, but the noise floor was lower. Over.
Okay. N2IRJ, this is WB4AIO, transmitting for signal-to-noise analysis. So on your vertical, I was giving you an 18 dB signal-to-noise ratio, which is not bad, not too much worse than what you're giving me. And let's see what it is on the Beverage.
Okay, I'm on the Beverage, and it's an S3 noise floor, and you're going up to a 7.
Wow, that's a 24 dB signal. That's a 24 dB signal-to-noise ratio. That's really good. A little bit better than on the vertical. And for this time of day, with the sun reasonably high in the sky already, I consider that to be not bad at all.
I agree. Boy, there are some times where this Beverage really works. I mean, it's working some now, but I find when it's not staticky out and at certain times of the day and band conditions, man, does it hear things that the vertical doesn't.
Yeah, I guess it would be nice if I had one, because the inverted L, which I'm using for both transmitting and receiving, you know, basically it's a Marconi antenna, and a lot of the pickup is vertical, so it does pick up local noises in a more or less omnidirectional manner. And although my local line noise, the very, very loud, debilitating line noise, seems to have disappeared for the moment, I think there is a more distant line noise. You know, I don't know if the loud one that seems to have temporarily at least disappeared was, say, you know, 500 feet away from my antenna. I think there's a new one that's materialized. It's, you know, probably something like 2,000 feet away from the antenna, and it's not very strong, but it's constantly there, and it's just this background buzz mixed with the galactic noise and the receiver noise that just takes a little bit away from my enjoyment of weak signal work. But I guess I'll just have to accept that living in this suburban environment, there's probably no way to totally eliminate it outside of having an extremely responsible power company constantly monitoring their antique power grid, and I'm pretty much sure that that's not going to happen. WB4AIO.
Yeah, I thought I had peace and quiet out here in the country when I was the only house, but then they brought in streetlights, and one street below me, they have no streetlights to this very day. So that would have really been nice if they would have done the same thing here as they did down there, you know, in the wilderness, and no streetlights even. I mean, an underground power, you know, and far enough away from the other polluters, utility poles, that it would turn out okay. So anyway, I feel for you, but at least thank God you're on the air and you're able. And I don't know, maybe you're antenna would launch a longer signal than Tunder's. His might fill in better locally. Well, the thing that's helping him is that 70 feet. That 70 feet is really, you just can't, you know, there's an old saying in cars, you can't, there's no substitute for cubic inches. Well, there's no substitute for height on horizontal antennas. Over. N2IRJ.
Oh, yeah. That's very crucial, particularly on this band, and even more so on 160. Basically, you've got to get it above a quarter wave to give a decent efficiency and decent medium to low angle propagation. And that's difficult to do it, you know, on this band. That means more than 60 feet. And it's really difficult to do on 160 because it means more than 120 feet.
Right. The band is drying up little by little. The noise floor is still S3. And you have reduced one S unit. You're down to S6.
You guys both are 25 over here in Ohio.
Wow, is that WGM?
Yes, it is. Hello, greetings, everybody.
Wow, great to hear you, Steve. Your rig is sounding good. Are you on the vertical or the dipole?
I'm on the dipole right now, but the vertical has been working rather well on the 40 and higher band, so I'm also going to be setting up the vertical for 160. I'm working right now on a little box that I'm going to for matching the vertical for the 160 band. So It should be interesting. But yeah, I'm just running barefoot right now, about 100 watts. And the 930 seems to be working really well. And the little modifications I did to it seem to be working. The PX board is really nice on this rig. So I was thinking maybe of selling it, but no, I think I'm going to keep it because it's really a nice rig. I really love the 930. You guys both have come in really well. This is NHWGF.
Thanks. Thanks for the signal report, Stephen. It's really neat to have you here. I hope you got to hear the beginning of the conversation because you were the topic. Your antenna, at least, was the topic of the conversation. And you're giving me an S5 with a noise floor of S3. And it's no offense to be at that level for two reasons, the time of day, and number two, the power level. You're only running 100 watts? Oh, my God. If you put on power, that would change everything. And that's one reason I wasn't participating in the Wednesday Liberty Net. I had a breakdown of equipment here, and that's why we're on the frequency now trying to test it to make sure that it works when we want it to work. Hell, if you want, you could Skype me and I'll patch you through and we could test that if you want, but if you're not up to it, we won't do that. And you know what? I just realized you're still in the process of building your station, so you might not be able to. I don't know. Let me turn it reverse rotation back to Steve and then give it to Kevin.
Okay, N2IRJ in the group. This is NHWGM. And yeah, it's I don't have Skype ability right now. My Skype is down. I don't have the mixer, which would allow me to use my MXL 990 mic. Right now I'm on a Kenwood MC60 mic. And I just got this thing up and running, the microphone. I was using a hand mic before, which it was a $5 TV mic that I wired up, and it seemed to have worked pretty well. But it wasn't the best situation. It was kind of awkward to use. I don't like using a hand mic very much, but this thing seems to be working rather well. But anyway, yeah, you guys are coming in really good. You know, one of the secrets to an awesome signal, too, is the property of the earth underneath you. And here in Ohio, specifically here in Richfield, I find that the ability of the earth to reflect the radio signal seems to be fairly good. I was really surprised at that. And down in southern Ohio, where I had my my rig set up, not this one, but my when I had my farm down there in beautiful downtown Londonderry, Ohio, I searched for about pretty close to 7 years looking for a good a QTH to set up a radio signal. And I would go around with my radio and try to figure out where, you know, I had my mobile. I was running an HF mobile rig, and I would pull into these places and check the signal strengths and talk to people all over the world. It was sort of fun doing that. But I finally found a spot, and I'll tell you what, that place was really excellent for radio. I was running for the most of the time 100 watts, and I've had people ask me, you know, what were you, are you running an amplifier? I go, no, it's just 100 watts. So, yeah, the height really helps with the trees and stuff, but also the properties of the earth that's underneath it, I think, has a lot to do with it. WB4AIO in a group, NHWGF.
Yeah, you're doing fantastically well, Steve, for 100 watts. You are 5 to 10 over 9. Marty is 15 over 9, but you're 5 to 10 over 9 with 100 watts, and I'm really impressed. And it's a full sun high in the sky daytime signal, too. So it's really great to hear you back participating in the net and now popping up during our daytime QSO on an unusual frequency. You must be scanning the bands with alacrity. By the way, I agree with you on ground. I think there is something about the ground characteristics of various locations that can really hurt or really help a station's signal strength, especially on this band. There are some people that just seem to have an unbelievable signal, and I mean by unbelievable, I mean 10 dB better than other guys in the same general part of the country. Even guys with antennas and power levels you think would give them a better signal are weaker than some of these guys with these magic locations. One of the guys with a magic location as far as I can determine, is Bill, KO4FE. He is so strong here, even when the skip is completely wrecked by bad propagation, he is still louder than anybody from his part of the country. And that seems to be true here, where I'm in short skip distance from him, and also at Marty's location, where it's medium distance skip from him. There's just something about his location that makes his installation particularly efficient. WB4AIO.
Yes, I must confer with what Kevin said, and as for magical locations, I was listening to a VE station on the eastern side of Canada. I can't remember where, and I can't remember the call sign, but I think Kevin would know it if I needed it. He's the one who put me on to the guy. But anyway, one time I was monitoring him, and he said that he obtained this map. It's space age. It's better than the ones of the past that just dealt with soil conductivity in Mohs, or shall I be more modern and say Siemens. But anyway, he claims that he's living in the hottest spot on the planet, and the map proves it. So I wish I could get a hold of that map. I wish I could get a hold of the guy. He was on 20 meters, and maybe I should make an effort to find out where he got the map and all that, because somehow from outer space or something, they took it one step further. Instead of just basing radio waves on the conductivity of the soil, they based it on actual reality tests or something of projected reflection back and all that, and they mapped it out, and it came out different than the old theory of that it's just pure ground conductivity. I guess what you're saying, Steve, is ground conductivity. It's just that it's not necessarily evidenced by the yesteryear's test equipment. N2IRJ, over to you, Steve. I'm all for that, because you're just starting to get into the noise now as the day wears on.
Maybe my signal came up, hopefully. But, there is, I've noticed that. There's no, obviously there's a reason why a lot of these shortwave stations will put a shortwave transmitting tower in these salt flats along coasts of their countries. And I remember reading about Radio Netherlands and how they searched and found that those salt flats and the flat areas near the ocean was the perfect spot for their antenna setup. So I always remember listening to that. Was the first shortwave station I ever heard was Radio Netherlands, and then of course I started listening into WWCR and all of that on my uncle's transoceanic. And that's what got me involved in listening to shortwave, and then eventually into ham radio. When I came upon the Liberty Net one night, and that was really an eye-opening experience. I never thought that other people felt the same way that I did about certain things. So hopefully, it'll continue. So anyway, that's it from here. I noticed the signal strength on everybody's starting to drop a little bit. It looks like the sun is doing its thing to this band. So back to you, Kevin. WB4AIO N8WGM.
Yeah, Steve, your signal came noticeably up when you switched the amplifier on. You are now equal in signal strength to Marty. You're both approximately 15 dB over 9. Very nice.
Well, you're hitting 20 over here, Kevin, right now. I mean, and I know what you mean about KO4FE with his signal strength. That he is continuously, always, no matter what. It seems like he's one of the few that I always hear, along with Vic and, of course, with Marty, too. Marty's setup there is, I'll tell you what, that thing, I never have a problem hearing Marty at all. So, Marty, your signal strength here is right now about equal to Kevin's. It's about 20 over. So back to you there, Marty. N2IRJ in the group, N8WGM.
Thank you for the reading. This is N2IRJ, Jackson, New Jersey, about 20 miles from the Atlantic Ocean, where there's plenty of salt water. A lot of the early years of radio pioneering occurred in this area, maybe by accident, but maybe because the conductivity was there too, or because they were trying to get Europe across the big pond, you know? And that's what I got too. I mean, I don't know if the salt water is pulling my signal the wrong way, but I'd like to cover the United States, and I do, but man, I also cover Africa, and I mean, if I go about 40 meters, I don't even have to work hard, and Namibia is coming back on me, and in fact, WB8RAV was there to witness it. He was on frequency with me back in those days, and he worked them too, but, you know, the power difference, you know, because of location probably was tremendous, and the guy from Namibia emailed me and all this and that, and oh, geez. So I want that power to go westward towards you and, you know, California and all of that, so our listeners can hear better, especially with a phone patch. So did you catch the beginning of our conversation or not when we were talking about your new dipole putting out such a damn good signal? Compared to the vertical, although, as you know, I'm using a vertical, but I'm sort of taking other measures to make it the best of both worlds. It's a compromise. I don't have any 70 feet tall trees, really, so I'm really messed up there. Over.
I did hear a little bit of it. I just, I was tuning through the bands, and I heard a familiar voice, and I said, hey, that's Kevin, and then I heard you chime in there, and, but yeah, I put this antenna up. Originally, I had another dipole up there. And what happened was the squirrels decided that they wanted to chew on my support rope, and down it came. So I had to go out and take the bow and arrow and send a line up over the trees here. We got some fairly high trees. Eventually, I'm going to try and get a dipole up at over 100 feet. We've got a couple of trees here that are well over 100 foot tall, and maybe that would be would help out with the signal even a little bit more. But I had a dipole up with number 14, or actually no, it was 18 gauge wire, and I found out though that 18 gauge wire was not very broadbanded. I was having problems tuning down lower in the frequencies. So what I ended up doing was because the squirrels brought the thing down, I said, all right, let's put up some 12 gauge wire and a little bit heavier rope, and soak the rope in what I did was I soaked it in bleach a little bit. I sprayed it with bleach, not soaked it, to keep them off of there. And every day I go out there and spray it a little bit, because these squirrels they're driving me nuts. I mean, they're everywhere. As a matter of fact, the hawks are having a field day in my backyard here. They're flying around and picking them off one by one. So maybe eventually my squirrel population will drop a little bit. But they seem to like to use that rope for their nests. So they were chewing on my antenna rope. But with this 12 gauge wire, I'm able to actually tune down the band. Because the Liberty that I had, it actually cut for $39.95, which is, you know, the home frequency of the LibertyNet. But I am getting a little bit of background noise from some type of spurious emission from something. It's like a clicking sound, and it's continuous. But it goes away after we get down to around $39.90 or so. And so I don't know if there's some power transformer or something that's doing this, or it almost sounds like an electric motor that's having a short or something in it that's causing that. But it's a constant clicking noise, and I only get it on 80 meters, so on the LibertyNet. And not only that, plus we're running into the situation with the German shortwave station, so that's also causing some reception problems. So, but overall, you guys are coming in really strong here, and having the antenna up over 70 feet really is a big help. I've noticed a big difference in the from the reports that I've been getting. So back to you, Kevin. WB4AIO, N8WGM.
You know, you peaked up at 30 over 9 at one point during that last transmission, so the band is changing. I think the height, not only is the absorption changing, but the height of the the reflective layer of the Kennelly Heaviside layer is probably changing as the sun gets higher in the sky also. You hit an amazing peak. I wonder, can you switch between the two antennas rapidly, or is that difficult, WB4AIO?
Well, I do have a problem with that, because what happens is I don't have my Dentron MT2008 tuner anymore. And the SWR on that vertical on 80 meters is running about 6 to 1. And I really don't like to run power on anything that's not resonant. And the vertical, which is, it's a 0.5, it works pretty good on 80, but not nearly as good as the dipole, of course. But the 0.5 is better for like 40 meters on up. So that's what I do, and I don't even run power on those bands anyway. I basically run barefoot up there. So, but yeah, it's kind of difficult to do it with this without the tuner. Over.
Oh, okay. Well, don't worry about it. But your signal is really good. The other night when we had nighttime propagation, I was listening. I was not transmitting, but I was listening to you talk to the guys, Steve, and your signal was consistently, that evening anyway, was consistently 30 over 9, and I believe you were on the dipole. And 30 over 9 is Vic's signal strength. So you were putting in a Vic-like signal, which really very few stations put in a consistent 30 over 9 here. And that night, the other night, you were doing exactly that. So that's very impressive. The only person that really outdoes Vic on a consistent basis here is KO4FE. And I don't know what the magic of his location is, but he is consistently stronger than Vic. And that is very, very rare on 75 meters. For somebody to be consistently stronger than Vic, I think WA1QIX achieves that. I think K1KW achieves that, and KO4FE achieves that, and maybe a few others, but not many. No others that I'm familiar with. And the funny thing is that KO4FE is only running about a kilowatt, not even a kilowatt, to an old homebrew linear amplifier, and does not have tubes with handles on them or anything like that. And he's just running a dipole at 40 feet. And other people from the same part of the country running more power to dipoles at 40 feet are unbelievably weaker than he is. So what the heck's going on? I think that some locations have extremely low loss in their ground reflections. That's my theory. And that most locations have pretty high loss in their ground reflections, higher than theory would suggest. And that's what makes some of these locations that don't have that characteristic shine. And, of course, I definitely notice the difference when you're in saltwater areas. I regularly visit the island of Chincoteague off the coast of Virginia, which is an island surrounded by saltwater, a saltwater bay on one side, and the ocean on the other side. And as soon as I drive onto the island, listening on my car radio, the entire AM broadcast band just comes alive, even though I'm in southern Virginia. As soon as I drive onto that island surrounded by salt water, all of the New York City broadcast stations, and we're talking daytime, ground wave, come in perfectly. In southern Virginia, during the day, no skip, just ground wave. Unbelievable. WB4AIO.
Yep. I'll just add that early in this QSO, Kevin, I forgot that we had started at 4 kilocycles bandwidth kilohertz, and I switched from 3.4 to 4, so the rest of the recording will be good. For the last half hour, it's been good. But unfortunately, some bad operators' lids have come below us, and they're within our passband, and that's not very nice. As for squirrels, yes, Steve, I try to convince Kevin that that's my worst enemy here in New Jersey. They ruined my beverage antenna once up where the resistor is. It's number two, they broke it. And then number two, out back where the feed point comes from the beverage, I used to have a preamplifier circuit there powered by a wall wart run into the woods about 200 feet. And they chewed through it and shorted it out. And the damn wall wart burned up. So, and then that happened more than once. So I did away with that system. Not that I couldn't figure out a wiring method to defeat the squirrels, but then they came back and they fixed my car. I had a relatively brand new car, 2010 at the time. That's what it is now. I still have it. And my wife goes out, and she couldn't get it to go. And we lifted the hood, and there are all kinds of leaves in there, and like a miniature nest starting to be built. And the wiring loom had been chewed completely. And it was awful. That cost a lot of money. The wiring loom was like $1,300, but instead of replacing it, it was repaired, and that was not an easy project. And I owe somebody a lot of thanks for having done that. So what do you think, Steve? I've had my problems with squirrels too, and then the paranoid side of me, which is really not paranoid at all, if I go out there, sometimes they throw nuts at me. They act like it's their property. N2IRJ.
I love the creatures. I don't like to kill too much of anything. I will step on a cockroach if I have to, but because I know that they are not the cleanest of things. And I don't care for rats, but I like watching the squirrels. They're kind of fun. They are cute, but they are very, very damaging. We've had them come into the house, actually chew through some of the wood on the eaves, and make holes up in there to nest, and they can be very, very damaging. I've had squirrels in my vehicles, too. Just the other day, I had to evict a chipmunk that decided to set up a nest inside of my air cleaner on my 2013 Subaru Impreza. I was wondering, the car wasn't running right, there was something going on. I open up the hood and I find all these little nuts all over the place. And then I says, uh-oh, I kind of knew what was happening. So I opened up the air cleaner and it was packed full of these little helicopter nuts from the maple trees around here. And obviously they've been making a nest. And I think what's happened is they've been maybe even taking a ride with me when I go down the road, because you know it's kind of strange. I'll stop sometimes, and quite often after maybe going to the store or something, then I'll see a chipmunk run out from underneath my car, and I'm like, I wonder if that thing was underneath my hood. And then you know you smell those roasting nuts on top of the engine. And I'm lucky I didn't have a fire, but I've had a lot of problem with rodents on my in my vehicles. I had an ATV that actually they destroyed the engine because I was running an open air cleaner without a filter on it for a little bit, and they got in there, and sure enough, a mouse got into the combustion chamber, and oh, that was the end of it. I mean, I ended up having to rebuild that engine. It cost me quite a bit of money to do that. So, yeah, they're not. Although they are cute little critters, I'm certainly glad that the hawks are out there. I won't kill them, but if the hawks want to do it, I say go to it. WB4AIO at 8WGM.
Well, there is a balance in nature, I suppose. I remember that when I lived in Northern Virginia, there was a barber shop, and the barber had trained a wild squirrel to do an interesting trick. You'd be sitting in the barber's chair getting a haircut, and this little gray squirrel, would come up to the big plate glass window on the front of the barber shop, and he would sort of spread eagle himself on the glass and like tap, tap on the glass. And the squirrel did that, the barber would open the front door, the squirrel would come into the barber shop, walk right up the middle of the store, and would leap up onto your chair, and then leap up behind your head onto the headrest on the back of the barber's chair, and where the barber had placed a single peanut. And the squirrel would retrieve that and then go outside, the barber would open the door for him again, he would go outside, and he would sit there looking at you, eating the peanut, and he would repeat that trick again and again and again. I guess he had learned that those particular humans were not threatening, and who knows, maybe feeding him peanuts made him less likely to chew the wiring infrastructure. WB4AIO.
That's a great story. Yeah. N2RJ here, Jax, New Jersey. I want to say that I've never killed any of the gray squirrels out here that are cute looking and yet have done me so much damage. As a little kid, unfortunately, there was one day in my life where my friends armed me with their BB guns, rifles, and we went squirrel hunting, but not for gray squirrel, red squirrel. And the reason, the justification they gave me was that the red squirrels are real mean. They're like blue jays or something. And then they bite off the testicles of the gray squirrels. And that's not very nice. But I don't know if that's a true story or not, but it turns out that that day, there was a massacre of red squirrels because I had a very good aim, but I've never hurt them ever since. When I was a little kid, I think with my slingshot shot a bird, and I had performed a burial service and all that stuff, and you know, I felt so sorry afterwards, you know. So I agree with you, Steve. Let the hawks maintain the natural balance. That's what happened here with the mice. I had a mouse problem, and it's right at the borderline now of one. I want to say this: the birds are squawking and going nuts outside, and here this baby hawk was perched on my rain gutter outside my bedroom window. And ever since that happened, it must have grown up by now, the mouse population has really gone down. Over to you, Steve.
Okay, N2IRJ in the group. This is NAWTM. And, Marty, your signal is about F9 right now. Your signal is very strong, still very copyable. Kevin, you just hit 30 over on your last transmission. You're really pounding in here. It's almost like we have a direct pipeline right now. So it's kind of unusual for conditions that this late in the morning on 80 meters. I know that. On the squirrel story, that's cute. I enjoy watching them, and I don't want to harm them or hurt them. I even your story, Marty, about the bird reminds me of the old Andy Griffith show with when Opie shot the mama bird and ended up taking care of the little baby birds in the nest. And he felt so bad about killing that bird that he felt like he had to be, you know, their surrogate mother then. And so he took over and let that bird, eventually the bird got old enough and it flew off. And it was a lesson for Opie, you know. Life is pretty precious, and even the lower forms of life, which may not oftentimes be the lowest form of life, I know some human beings that don't even measure up to the squirrels and chipmunks, so I let it go at that. So anyway, back to you, Kevin. Again, your signal strength here is hitting well over 25 to 30 over, so very awesome signal this morning. WB4AIO in the group, NHWGM.
Yeah, okay, great, Steve. I thank you for the signal report. You're doing extremely well also. You haven't come up to 30 again, but now you're consistently 20. So propagation is changing, and it seems to be at the moment dropping out a little bit for New Jersey and peaking up for Ohio. You're in the northeastern part of Ohio, is that right?
Yeah, and you know, I just noticed your signal strength dropped down to like an S9 right now. So obviously something just happened. I don't know what it is. Whether it's probably just the atmosphere is changing because of the sun's activity. But yeah, the signal strength is dropping. And I'm in Northeast Ohio between Akron and Cleveland. Over.
Yeah. Okay. Very good. Well, we're closer than either of us is to Marty. I don't know how many miles it is, but I'm in western Pennsylvania, near a little town called Beaverdale, which is about 66 miles east of Pittsburgh and maybe a few miles east of Johnstown, if you know where that is. Sort of in the Allegheny Mountains, really. We're a part of Appalachia here, where it's always 10 degrees colder than it is in the rest of the state. But it is beautiful country. But anyway, using an inverted L Marconi-style antenna with two elevated radials, just two elevated radials for a counterpoise, and it's located, the antenna is 100, the radiating part of the antenna is 150 feet in total length, inverted L shape, series fed at the base with open wire line and a balun to isolate the open wire line from the unbalanced antenna. So that's what I'm doing, and I guess we're both using Clipperton amplifiers. So anyway, a little under 1,000 watts right now. I have not made the loading capacitor modification yet, so I don't quite get the amount of power you're getting, but this thing works reasonably well. Marty, I wanted you to try the calling the Skype test call or calling somebody on Skype before we lose propagation so we can make sure that the patch is functioning perfectly for the upcoming LibertyNet. Do you think you could do that now?
Yes, I could. I wonder who I should call.
Well, you could either call me on the telephone or you could just call the Skype call test lady.
I'll call the Skype call test lady. I would have liked to talk to Steve, though, but that's okay. And by the way, Steve, I have to tell you something about rodents going into air cleaners. Remind me if I forget. I'm bringing up Skype now. It was already up, but let me find the number here. JKKKK, Kevin. Oh, you know what? I was going to call you. Let me take that back. Let me do the test call instead. Here goes Skype test call.
Hello. Welcome to Skype call testing service. After the beep, please record a message. Afterwards, your message will be played back to you.
Hello, Skype test call. This is N2IRJ performing a test for the upcoming Briar Patch tonight on 3995 kilocycles, the Great Liberty Net. Hello, Skype test call. This is N2IRJ performing a test for the upcoming Briar Patch tonight on 3995 kilocycles, the Great Liberty.
If you are able to hear your own voice, then you have configured Skype correctly. If you hear this message, but not your own voice, then something is wrong with your audio recording settings. Please check your microphone and microphone settings, or visit Skype.com for more help. Thank you for using the Skype call testing service. Goodbye.
This is N2IRJ back in so-called real time. I'll leave a pause, Steve, and then I want to tell you about the air cleaner situation. It sounded fine here, both sides, and you guys can tell me how it came over the air.
It was perfect at this location. Absolutely perfect.
Yeah, Marty, your signal strength here also came up. You were hitting about 20 over there, and it sounded excellent. And just great. It sounded really good.
Beautiful. Well, I'll do my response now to Steve. It turns out that in 1985 and 86, I was working as field technical manager for the Hyundai Corporation, and I was the only one in the United States, in fact, the only field technical manager. And one of the other managers who had a demo came in saying, "Man, this thing is running awfully bad. I don't know what's wrong." So I analyzed the situation, and just like you, instead of the air cleaner being filled up with maple seeds and whatever the other thing is called, I forgot its name, that makes it spin on the way down, it was dog food. And apparently this mouse in the guy's garage was stockpiling dog food from his dog food supply in a bag in the garage and packing the air cleaner completely solid with it until it starved the engine of air, and that's when it became, a problem that got brought to me. So I photographed it, wrote up engineering reports, and sent it back to Korea. And miraculously, for once, they listened to me. A few other times they did, too. And then, of course, they stole the idea, but and then never gave me any extra money or credit. But anyway, it turns out that they ended up putting a plastic grill on the entrance of the air intake on the 1987 through 89 XL, which would have never existed had that report not been given to them. No doubt they must have had other reports from other places in other countries, but it was particularly bad in this location. Probably in your location, too. It's just that there's no field technical manager out there in Ohio at the time to send glossy color photographs. And to RJ. Over to you, Steve.
Okay, Marty, very good. Yeah. Dog food, that's interesting. I know mice are very damaging. I've had expensive equipment absolutely ruined by mice getting into it, and it's amazing the small little spaces that they can squeeze themselves into. Mice have articulated skulls where they can actually cause their skulls to sort of shrink a little bit and flatten out so they can get into areas that they normally wouldn't be able to get into. So kind of interesting how they do that. And I don't know if you ever saw that video about the microwave antenna that was filled with 300 pounds of acorns. If you haven't, I'll send you the link. It's kind of interesting. They have a bucket that goes up to this microwave tower, and they went in there and they realized that the microwave antenna was not working anywhere anymore. So what they did was they opened it up and they found 300 pounds of acorn dust in it. And they're not sure what animal did it. They suspect a woodpecker, but I don't know why they would suspect a woodpecker, because woodpeckers don't eat acorns. They're more into eating the grubs and bugs that are underneath the bark, and not so much nuts or anything. So, but anyway, it was kind of interesting to watch this. They open it up, and out pours this gigantic, like, waterfall of acorn nuts, and it was really amazing what this animal did. So, they seem to have a way of damaging things that, well, maybe it's natural for them. I mean, I can't blame them, because that's what they do. Just like when I have woodpeckers on the side of the house, this house is brick, but I have some wood on the house, and they're putting holes in that, and that's what they do for a living. So I can't hold them against them.
Yeah, they do what's natural. They do what comes natural, just like some groups of humans do what's natural. And they're even more annoying than putting holes in your house, but just stay away from those groups. Hey, I just bat it back and forth informally. No need to have a rotation. I'm sending a text message to my girlfriend here, so I'll be here. I'll be coming back and forth, but I want to finish the text message. WB4AI.
Okay. I'll pick it up in the interim then. It turns out, Steve, I saw a video, and it might be the same one, many years ago. And feel free to send it again. It would be nice to see. And at the time, I didn't remember them blaming the woodpeckers, but I doubt that, too. They just peck to get to drive the bugs out and then eat the bugs, which are soft. I don't think they would stockpile nuts. It sounds like the work of a squirrel. I keep blaming them, but it's true. I've caught them red-handed. And I never knew about the bleach trick that you spoke of, where you discourage them by spraying things with bleach. I wonder, though, could the bleach maybe break down the fabric over time, like oxidize it or damage it or anything? You know, the rope, if it's a nylon rope or some other type of polypropylene rope, I just don't know. Or damage plants. I mean, it I've heard putting other things around, like, I don't know, it's dried something blood, I don't know what it's called, and for example, I have these ewes, I think they're called, and the deer eat them like crazy. I've never trimmed them in 25 years, the deer do. Into IRJ.
Steve, about the clicking. I'm not sure what clicking you're hearing, but there is. I mean, you might be hearing a local source of interference. I don't know, but there is a clicking sound up around 3995 that is heard all over the East Coast. At least it's heard here in Western Pennsylvania, and it's also heard at Marty's location in New Jersey. And it's some kind of artifact or intermodulation product of some kind of very weird digital communication system that has a very strong signal up around 4550, 4600 kilohertz. And that digital, what I presume is some kind of digital communication system, consists of a lot of sweeping carriers sweeping back and forth at various rates simultaneously on a regular basis. And somehow or other, there's an artifact of those sweeping strong carriers that exists down on 3995, and if you listen very carefully, you can tell that it's not really a click. It's two carriers rapidly sweeping through the passband and make a tick, tick, tick kind of sound. And I've had two receivers on simultaneously, actually the two receivers that are built into this SDR-1000, and I've listened to the signal up on 4600, 4550, wherever it is, I forget the exact frequency, and I've listened to the clicking on 3995, and they're precisely synchronized, WB4AIO.
Okay, it turns out that it was a double, and 7-3, Steve, you're right, the band is doing what we would have expected it to do, and that's why we're starting to do the doubling. The beginning of what you said was not heard by Steve, Kevin, over.
Oh, sorry. Do I have it now?
Barely. I can barely hear you.
Wow, that's not good. I guess I'm not doubling now. Anyway, I was just saying, Steve, that there is a clicking sound. I'm not sure it's the clicking sound you're hearing, but there is a clicking sound that both Marty and I can hear in our two different locations that is up on 3995 kilohertz, mostly at night, but sometimes you can hear it during the day too a bit. I don't know where it is geographically, but it's some kind of artifact of a digital communication system that consists of a bunch of sweeping carriers up around 4550, 4600 kilohertz. And it has an intermodulation product or an artifact of some kind that is precisely synchronized with it down on 3995. And it's been there for, I don't know, maybe about a year.
Okay, very good, Kevin. Yeah, the band is just totally gone dead now. So I'll say 73s to both of you from NAWDM.
Okay, 73, Steve. Great to hear you on.
Yes, it was a great treat to have you, Steve. This is really neat. Boy, you are really an HF listener to find us here like this out of the blue. I was originally doing some tests on upper sideband 3995 before I came down here. It was on Kevin's suggestion. Okay, 73 Steve, see you later tonight. And Kevin, if you want to phone me, that's fine. And the band's drying up between us too. N2IRJ.
Okay, I guess I'll do that. The band really is not drying up here. I guess I'm sort of in a central location. Both you guys are still 100% perfectly copyable. Although you've lost 10 dB or so, it's really no problem. I could carry on with signals like this indefinitely. But anyway, I guess I'll let y'all go. 73, good luck in the contest, and QSL via the Bureau. N8WGM and N2IRJ. In Ohio and New Jersey, respectively. This is WB4AIO, transmitting from near Beaverdale, Pennsylvania, where the beavers are in the street, in the trees, by the stream, in the river, in your front yard, and knock, knock, knock on your front door. The beavers are practically everywhere in Beaverdale. Saying 73, and bye-bye for now.
That's a good sense of humor. Just so you know, on the signal strength, it varied. There's QSB. At best case, the noise floor has increased to S3.5, and your signal at best was S5, and at worst case, you were about a half an S unit above the noise, so there's the QSB factor, but I copied everything into IRJ. I guess I'll say 73 to you too, and chat with you in a few minutes.